at 3:03 p.m. on Tuesday?
Thursday.
January 25th. Yes. 2024. We don't have a quorum, but we're just hearing. I don't mean to slight you. And it's not that we're just hearing the update, but we got some formalities and hopefully we get an audience because I don't want to waste your time. To do business today, we're meeting in Davis Room 106 of the Capitol Building, and please silence your cell phones out of courtesy to others. And so far we have Representative Mina and myself, Chair Mike Brox. And I'd also like to introduce my committee aide, Riley Nye. If you have notes to pass to us, please get Riley's attention and take care of that. And there's a blank. The records recorder is, I'm sorry, Cheryl Cole. And our teleconference moderator is Dylan Williams. Thank you for joining us. And today we have just one item on the agenda, a presentation, an update of the Department of Health by Commissioner Heidi Hedberg and Deputy Commissioner Emily Ricci. So please, Commissioner Hedberg and Deputy Commissioner Ricci, if you could please put your name on the record and begin your presentation. And yeah, I'm sorry, but we are busier than we thought we would be. We'll try and get through this by 4. We might do, and a hard stop at 4:30. So please proceed.
For the record, my name is Heidi Hedberg, Commissioner for the Department of Health. And I would like to acknowledge also we have Dr. Ann Zink, our Chief Medical Officer, online and in the room. In case there's any questions, we have all of our directors for each of the divisions, Leah Van Kirk, our Policy Advisor, and Courtney Enright, our Legislative Liaison. So the mission for the Department of Health is promoting the health, well-being, and self-sufficiency of all Alaskans. And we were very excited to celebrate our one-year anniversary, July 1st. It has been an incredibly busy year. We have had a lot of focus on stakeholder engagement around healthcare, childcare, and behavioral health. And a real focus on leveraging automations to support staff processes and client experience. When we look at our focuses, there's actually been 4 major arcs of effort. And those 4 major arcs of effort have been behavioral health, complex care, child care, and transformation of care that I'll talk about at the end of the slide deck. We've made a lot of progress over the last year in terms of system and policy alignment, and incredibly proud of our staff and the dedication they have to the mission. Slide 3 is the topics that we will be covering today. On slide 4, what I would like to do is talk about SNAP, also known as food stamps. When I started the position as commissioner for the Department of Health in November of 2022, I inherited a backlog. With new leadership within the Division of Public Assistance, a business process redesign, and contractual support, we were able to eliminate that first backlog. And there were several months where we had timely processing of applications. This fall, there was a cascade of quick events that really created this current backlog that I'm going to talk about today.
And if I might interrupt you, Representative Fields joined us at 3:06. Thank you. I'm sorry.
For the record, Heidi Hedberg. In the quick succession of events, all states had a waiver by Food Nutrition Services, a waiver to temporarily pause interviews during the pandemic. That waiver ended on September 30th. And so just like in Alaska, all of the states started interviews. We had a lot of new staff. What we were seeing is the average processing time during an interview was around 96 minutes. We did a root cause analysis, and we determined we really needed to invest time in interviews. When we were starting to look at our processing times and identifying interviews was one issue, At the same time, there was a planned event where we had moved our document management system to the cloud, so that there was a lag in documents and processing. In addition to South Central Alaska, had experienced several winter storms that impacted offices and schools. Our employees have families, they have kids, and they need to be home with the kids. So really, that was what caused the backlog that we are working through today. We took immediate action. I want to talk about what some of those actions were. First, when we noticed our numbers, we reached out to Food Nutrition Services, the federal agency, and requested a waiver to temporarily pause interviews so that we could focus in on our training. It took them a while to come back to us. They declined that waiver. I took it upon myself, working with the division leadership, and said it's in the best interest of the state that we process these applications and we temporarily pause interviews and accept client statements, which is currently what we're doing right now. In addition, we were working with the team. I asked the team, what is your goals for completing this backlog? They set their goals at around 950 applications per week. When we temporarily paused the interviews, took client statements, they set the goals. The staff have been doing a great job in processing those applications. And to date, it is less than 5,000. And they're on target to complete and eliminate that backlog by the end of February. Our big focus is how do we prevent these backlogs from happening? The next slide, I'll talk about a lot of the automations. But what I want to say is we're also identifying that we need to focus in on our training. We had a contractor come in, evaluate how we conduct training. They provided a lot of recommendations, and we're currently working through implementing those recommendations. On slide...
I might interrupt you again. Representative Ruffridge and Representative McCormick joined us at 3:09, and for everybody's edification, we're going to try and get through this as quick as we can. We have a hard deadline at 4:30, and we're going to try and get out by 4 because there's a lot of other things going on. Please.
For the record, Heidi Hedberg. On slide 5, what I would like to do is just share with you the 6 automations that the Division of Public Health, Division of Public Assistance will be implementing over the next 8 months. We really appreciate the legislature last year appropriating the capital funds for the IT infrastructure. And what we are seeing now is the fruits of those funds come to fruition. So in November, as I mentioned, our document management system moved to the cloud. January, this month, we moved Aries to the cloud. By having those two systems in the cloud, it enhances the security of the data, improves reliability, and it updates that technology infrastructure so it's our staff are able to allow for growth in this quick change. So because of those shifts, what we see before you is that on December 27th, we were able to launch our SNAP online application. We did it very quietly. We wanted to see what the rollout would look like. The SNAP online application is under My Alaska. So as Alaskans are applying for their permanent fund dividend, you can scroll down, apply for SNAP, apply for Medicaid online. What we are seeing preliminarily is that we have around 1,400 applications that have been completed to date. What we are seeing is that because there's prompts asking the questions, if you answer yes, it's a drop-down menu with additional documentation, another prompt asking for supporting documentation. So it's really encouraging that applicant to answer the questions and to upload the supporting documentation. If you answer no, it advances to the next question. So we're seeing shorter time to complete the application. We're also seeing additional documentation so that when an eligibility technician receives that application, they're able to make a faster determination. Again, interviews are temporarily paused. That will change when we start interviews, but it is promising. The self-service portal is the next to launch. That's going to be the first quarter of 2024. Clients will be able to upload any supporting document for any of the public assistance programs. Then this spring, we will be launching the online interim report. It is a federal requirement for SNAP that clients communicate at their midpoint during the certification period any changes to their SNAP application. So it will be a client user, they'll be able to, you know, easier for the client to communicate changes. In addition, this spring, we will be launching what we call advanced capture intelligent scanning. There's multiple phases to this technology. The initial phase is that when applications come into our document management system, this module called Engage will be able to scan it. If it sees it's an initial application for SNAP, put it into the queue for initial applications. If it's a recertification, put it into the queue for recertification. This is really going to help our clerical staff. Instead of scanning and reading, this is going to be an automation. This summer, we are very excited for the second phase of the self-service portal that will allow clients to log in, and then they can check the status of their public assistance application to see if their, you know, eligibility technicians are waiting on documentation, to schedule an interview, to check their status, and to be able to look at those documents that they uploaded. So we're really excited for that second phase. And then the last tool that will be launched is the ability for clients to opt in to e-notification. Right now, all notifications are mailed out. We know that mail can get lost through the system or at home. And so this is, again, an opt-in service for the clients to choose to receive their notices via email. Finally, what I just want to mention is, again, all of these tools are to support the clients and our staff. As you look at these three wheels, what we are really intentionally doing is like working on IT infrastructure that support our staff with these policy changes. We've had a lot of improvements over the last 12 months. The next 12 to 18 months, we're going to see a lot more increases in our workflow processing. And we are still on target in 2025 to be launching our integrated eligibility enrollment system.
Cool.
Good afternoon. For the record, this is Emily Ricci, Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Health, and I'm going to speak to slide 6. So I just wanted to reorient the committee quickly, which is beginning of April. In April of last year, all states in the nation were required to undertake a review of eligibility determinations for all Medicaid beneficiaries. Prior to that, the federal government had required continuous enrollment, so only allowing states to disenroll individuals for specific reasons in response to the COVID public health emergency beginning in the spring of 2020. So beginning April 1, as outlined in federal statute and then further in regulation, states were required to undertake a very challenging process using new systems and new tools as well as new requirements to undertake that process. I think ultimately the new system and the tools will result in better service to members and more efficient app processing by Medicaid systems across the country, but we are still in that stand-up phase and many states are being challenged with this effort. So coming into the committee today, we are about 10 months into the process, and we have initiated over 90,000 redeterminations using an automated or ex parte process that I'll talk about in more detail a little bit further on in the slide. When we move to the next slide, on slide 7, you'll see that the number of Medicaid renewals that have been either initiated or reviewed is actually higher. It's closer to 140,000 overall. And that's because we immediately began to think about what we would need to be successful in undertaking this Medicaid redetermination effort. And we began to negotiate several mitigation strategies as well as additional flexibilities with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So one of our first steps was to negotiate additional time with the Centers for Medicaid and Medicaid Services to complete and initiate redeterminations. And we were successful in doing that. We've also implemented a number of new mitigation strategies. Perhaps one of the mitigation strategies that has been most impactful is leveraging SNAP applications to make Medicaid renewal determinations. So while I noted in the first bullet that we've initiated over 90,000 redeterminations using our ex parte process, we've been able to process an additional over 40,000 additional redeterminations using the SNAP application. So that's been very meaningful to the system. We have also, and I would just add that all of our mitigation measures are available online. So anyone who's interested can go online and see that. It's posted on the Division of Public Assistance website. We have also initiated new access to data for partners. We wanted to try to reach out to providers, tribal health organizations, and share information so that if they are engaging with a patient or someone that that they work with, that they are able to support them in completing renewal forms or packets if necessary. So we leverage the Health Information Exchange, and we're able to start pushing out renewal information using the Health Information Exchange to individuals who were impaneled with a specific provider, and we set up specific data sharing agreements with certain provider organizations, including tribal health organizations. We also stood up texting in, I believe it was in October, we started to roll out texting. So individuals who may need to return a renewal form and who had not done that are now receiving a text reminder, reminding them to return that form. So like any new process, we stood up an automated or ex parte process beginning in April. And Alaska, like other states, has seen some success with that process, but also some challenges. Currently, the number of Medicaid redeterminations, the percentage of Medicaid redeterminations that are run through that ex parte process at any given month fluctuates, but it's generally around 25%. That means 25% of the redeterminations that are run through that process can be automatically renewed or determined. So that's taking 25% of that volume out of the workflow that our Division of Public Assistance technicians would generally be handling. We are focused on increasing this number to get it as high as possible, and we're actually working with a team from the Centers for Medicaid and Medicaid Services Digital Services team to help us identify ways where we can increase the percentage of those renewals that are automated, and so that we can use this in future years. In August, I would say in about August, July and August, at a national level, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services noticed that they were seeing a higher disenrollment rate for procedural reasons, meaning individuals were being disenrolled because they were not returning a form. And they asked all states to conduct a test of their ex parte system to determine if there was an error. Alaska determined that there was an error, and as a result of that, we paused certain disenrollments, and we are working with the U.S. Digital Service to identify ways that we can improve the system to address that error. In the meantime, we are continuing to conduct redeterminations, but for those certain disenrollments that would be impacted by the error, we are pausing until we can update the system, and then we will begin to process those procedural disenrollments. We also, the Division of Public Assistance team, also went back and they reviewed all the cases that could have been impacted by that error and identified those that were impacted and fixed those. So as I said, we're working with our federal data services to update and fix the system. Those fixes will take effect over the next 6 months, and we're hoping that as a result, they will also increase our successful automated renewals. So moving on to slide 7, as I said earlier, you can see that one of the first things we did was negotiate additional time with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to complete redeterminations. So the schedule and the graph that you see here, the green bars outline the number of renewals that have either been initiated or reviewed using a combination of the ex parte or automated process and our SNAP applications as well. And those are the green boxes, as well as those that we anticipate renewing over the next 9 months. Those are the blue boxes. So this represents an 18-month time period under which the state of Alaska has permission to conduct renewals and redeterminations. I think what's important for the committee to be aware of is that one of the mitigation measures that we negotiated as well was to allow for an extended period of time for individuals to return their renewal packet and have their eligibility retroactively reinstated. So the reason I mention that is because the data regarding outcomes for many of these redeterminations will change over a fairly long period of time. We actually have 180 days where an individual can return a renewal packet and have their eligibility retroactively reinstated. So we anticipate that the numbers for the outcomes of the redetermination effort will change over time as people return those packets and their status is updated. So moving on to slide 8, one of the areas that we always want to highlight for the committee is how we can leverage Medicaid savings and federal funds to really let us most effectively and efficiently use our general fund savings in the Medicaid program. And I know that this committee is well aware of the Tribal Reclaiming Initiative that the department has undertaken since 2017. It has been very successful, and in 2023, through the work of the Division of Healthcare Services, they were able to reclaim $124.5 million. So these are federal, these are claims that are eligible for 100% federal funding rather than the typical mix of state funding and federal funding for individuals who are both Medicaid beneficiaries and also a member of a tribal health organization receiving services through a tribal health organization or another or through a covered care agreement. So this is good news. We proactively try to increase as much as we can the opportunities to reclaim additional federal funds. You'll notice there's a large increase between 2022 and 2023, and some of that has to do with establishing systems to reclaim federal funds for behavioral health claims, as well as some out-of-state hospitals. So moving on to the next slide, one of the areas that I wanted to mention briefly is some work that we've undertaken that will span several years and I think is very important to the committee and to different stakeholder groups. And this really includes stepping back and taking a look at all of the different methods of Medicaid rate methodologies and structures and really trying to determine, are they still appropriate? Are they achieving the intended goals? Are there things that we could do to improve how we establish Medicaid rates and what we're using to collect the data that we need to do that? So we are planning to do a review of all Medicaid rate methodologies that are within the program, and there's quite a lot of them. There's a number of different providers as well. So we are undertaking this review in phases. The first phase was actually released through a RFP for public comment about just almost 2 weeks ago, and it focuses on behavioral health rates, long-term care services and supports, including home and community-based waiver services, federally qualified health centers, and non-emergent medical transportation. So we anticipate closing public comment on the RFP tomorrow and issuing a RFP and moving forward. Our intent is to move forward very collaboratively with impacted stakeholders and, again, identify really if there are opportunities to improve the system we have in place today. Another item that is important for the committee to be aware of is that we went live with a project that has been underway for several years, and that is implementing diagnosis-related groups for inpatient reimbursement for certain hospitals in Alaska and outside of Alaska. So that project went live January 1 of this year.
And if I may interrupt, Representative Sumner joined us at 3:26. Please continue.
For the record, Heidi Hedberg. On slide 10, what I would like to do is just quickly discuss some child care updates. I'm going to focus on the funding and then just provide a short update on the task force on child care. So with ARPA funds, federal funds, there was $14 million that was given to 17 recipients. It's really innovation. It's new types of child care. Just quickly for you to get a snapshot, that funding supported in Homer, they developed an employer-sponsored child care program for the hospital employees. In Copper River Census area, they were able to increase their capacity from 35 to 70 with a high-quality licensed child care program. And in Juneau, they were able to design an apprenticeship program with stipends. And in Anchorage, they had a pilot of a worker-owned cooperative childcare program for four partners establishing full-time childcare for 52 employees. So lots of great innovative. There were 17 awardees, and we're happy to share more details if you're interested. The second update, last year the legislature appropriated $7.5 million for workforce stabilization, the fastest mechanism the Department of Health has to getting the funding to the childcare workers. Is through an organization called THRED. We granted the funds to THRED. THRED has a program called Roots. They advertise to all childcare workers to apply for a Roots Award. That application process for the workforce stabilization closed on January 15th, and funds will be awarded in February. Next, I just want to give an update on the Task Force on Childcare. In April, the governor created an administrative order. It's time limited for a year. There is members that represent across the state, and there's two reports, one that was submitted to the governor in December, and the second will be submitted in July. The first focus of area was around background checks, licensing, workforce, employers, and tribal authority. 33 recommendations in those five areas, and some of those recommendations the department has already implemented. The next focus of effort that has started in January and go through July is focusing on access, quality, and subsidies, and we look forward to that collaborative process.
For the record, my name is Emily Ricci, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Health. The next slide, we're going to talk about an area of focus, which is improving the behavioral health continuum of care. We know that there's been a tremendous amount of focus and attention on this issue across the state, and really our goal is to try to make sure that Alaskans have access to the care that they need, either in their community or as close to their community as possible. And so one of the things that we did was we really stepped back over the last 8 months and we went to five different regions in Alaska and really tried to listen to what challenges are facing providers, impacted individuals and communities in the regions, and really hear what solutions may be in place as well as what challenges exist, and thinking about how we can come together to address those. And when we came back and we thought about and we looked at the information and the feedback that we received as a result of those five regional work groups that we held, we really identified seven different themes when we think about the continuum of care related to behavioral health. And those are represented on the left side of the slide. And they represent everything from prevention and early intervention to outpatient treatment through crisis response, inpatient or acute services, step down, and then also really a need for additional care coordination and support in navigating the system for those who are impacted and for their families. We also identified a need to, I think, better identify and use the data systems that we have and leverage those data systems to help support individuals to make sure that they were getting the care coordination and navigation that they need, as well as to help us identify and track trends in a more comprehensive way. So I share that because this is a framework that we're going to be using as we focus our efforts in building out the continuum of care, both statewide and on a regional basis over the next several years. So there are a number of different efforts underway to really address this issue. Some of those are periodic, like the Comprehensive Integrated Mental Health Program Plan, and others are very specific, like the Department of Justice report. So what we wanted to do was try to highlight for the committee the different efforts that are underway and how they relate to each other, as well as the different groups and types of services that each effort is focusing on. So the first is this Comprehensive Integrated Mental Health Program Plan that is really looking at all Alaskans and needs across the state. The second area, which we've spoken about, I believe, in committee before, is a behavioral health roadmap for Alaska youth. And that was the effort I mentioned earlier when we went out to five different regions and held regional work groups, as well as a statewide online option for individuals to attend. The blue box is the Department of Justice report, and that's really focusing on Medicaid-eligible Alaskan youth who are at risk of institutionalization. And then the box on the right, the yellow box, really is, it talks about some of the complex care work that's happening between the Department of Health and the Division of Family and Community Services. And those are individuals that who may be of varying age ranges but have some very specific needs that are intense and acute and may not always – and our system may be sometimes a little bit too fractured to meet them comprehensively. So we're really trying to address those needs through collaborative work.
For the record, Heidi Hedberg. So on slides – on the next slide, there's no number. what I wanted to do is just spend just a minute and talk about within the Division of Public Health, they launched the Fresh Start program. For several years, they have had a program focused on weight loss, diabetes, and smoking cessation. They intentionally went out, listened to community members, focused on a communication plan, wrapped that together, and launched Fresh Start. And what we saw was a significant increase in Alaskans enrolling in the Fresh Start program. It is self-paced, it is free, and we are hearing a lot of stories from individuals that complete the program on how life-changing it is as it's supporting them with whatever they needed with these free tools and resources to help them with their obesity, their diabetes, and their and or smoking.
For the record, this is Emily Ricci, Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Health, and I'm speaking to slide 13. And this is really, again, another effort that I believe the committee is aware of, but it's and we will continue to highlight the good work that's happening right now. But this is work that's been undertaken by the Division of Senior and Disability Services, and it's really focused on moving to a system of care that allows individuals to identify, that allows the system to essentially identify individuals' needs, establish a budget for those needs, and then let the individual determine how they can best utilize that budget to meet those needs. So it's focusing on self-determination, flexibility, and then ultimately the development of new services. The division received $640,000 in funding last year, thanks to the legislature, and has been working very collaboratively with stakeholder groups as well to identify implementation plan moving forward. Currently, the plan is on track. The division is meeting with the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services to finalize the additional federal match, which is approximately $2.3 million, and it will... And after that, we'll begin to procure the technical assistance necessary to dig really into the details of how to modify this tool in order to meet the varying needs for Alaskans. We anticipate this effort will take approximately 3 years, and the division is working very closely with stakeholder groups as we move forward.
That was easy. And I need to add to the record, just to make the recorder's work more difficult, Representative Sadler had joined us at 3:12. Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, at the beginning of each year, I try to catch up with behavioral health providers to see what they're experiencing. And one of the things I heard about this year is that some of the Medicaid rates are insufficient to provide services envisioned under the 1115 waivers. Is that one of the things that you're trying to address with the Medicaid rate review? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, this is Emily Ricci. For the record, yes, that is one of the one of our priorities.
And through the chair, are autism services another one of the things that you're looking at through those Medicaid rate reviews and catching up for, as what I understand it, are many years of not keeping pace with inflation? So how do we bump that back up to catch up after many years of not keeping pace?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, Emily Ricci, for the record, yes, autism services are included in that first tranche of effort in terms of reviewing the rate methodology.
Okay, thank you. I've got other questions, but we'll wait for others, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Prox. So just a question. I have a few questions as well, but on slide 5 on the online applications, is there a mobile option for that? Either an app, or is it mobile friendly, or does it have to be done from a computer device.
For the record, Heidi Hedberg, through the chair, Representative Ruffridge. You would go to My Alaska and complete the application, and it is it's phone sized. You can use your phone to apply for a SNAP application.
And then I guess just one other question, and it was on slide 7 regarding renewals. And I think there was mention of 180-day look back or window for returning paperwork. But what is the time frame that people are asked to renew? Is that every 6 months? Or, sorry, go ahead.
Through the chair, Representative Ruffridge, this is Emily Ricci. Annually, typically Medicaid eligibility is reviewed annually.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Fields, Jim, you're there.
I'm there.
You're first. Representative Mina.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Prox. Through the chair, thank you for the presentation, for a lot of the updates and the work that the department is doing, especially, you know, I spoke to you about this before, but I think DPA is doing a really great job getting through the current backlog right now, especially with the increase in getting applications processed in December. And it's really great to see the online application be put up and figuring out what we can do to make it more accessible so that people can use it. And so I wonder if you could just comment on the language accessibility of the online application, and also the differences between the amount of applications that are getting completed through the online platform versus through the paper application.
For the record, Heidi Hedberg, it's a two-part question. So I'm actually going to call Director Etheridge up, and she can address the language question. In terms of processing applications, there are three teams. There's a team focused on current work that is coming in. And so there's 30 days to process a SNAP application. They work the oldest first. There's a team focused on the backlog. They're focusing on the oldest first. Those are applications older than 30 days. And so the online application, what we're seeing is more completed applications. And that's in the queue for processing, intermixed with paper applications.
Through the chair, my name is Deb Etheridge. I'm the director for the Division of Public Assistance. And representative, our applications are available in a variety of languages, and our online application is fully accessible, ADA accessible. And I am going to have to respond back to the committee on other languages available on the online application that is available and is mobile friendly.
Thank you. May I ask a follow-up?
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Prox. Through the chair, another follow-up is just in relation to plans for assistance for people who are doing the online application, especially in terms of people who don't have a lot of digital literacy. What does the department have to support people who need help filling things out?
Through the chair, this is Deb Etheridge, Director of Public Assistance. Representative, the Division of Public Assistance has a program called Fee Agents, where we engage individuals and we pay fee agents to assist people in filling out their online applications. We have been working closely with Food Nutrition Services to identify tasks that are considered non-merit that can be help to assist people. Any individual can assist a person in completing that online application. It's the verification of the individual there's a verification at the very end that sort of certifies that they're the individual applying for the benefit. But any person can assist somebody in filling out that online application.
One more follow-up, please.
Mm-hmm. Representative Mina.
Thank you. Through the chair, thank you for the information. What's the comparison between the average length of time, and I know it just launched, but the average length of time to complete the online application versus someone trying to fill out the paper application? And I know it varies a lot.
Through the chair, this is Deb Etheridge. That's a great question. Right now, we we anticipate it takes approximately 20 minutes to complete the online application because it's a smart form, which means that it only asks you for the questions that are necessary for the application for SNAP. Our paper applications are not dynamic, and so we have extremely long paper applications that don't use logic, so you don't exactly know what you have to fill out. So people end up filling out more questions than are necessary for SNAP. And I want to be clear that the only thing you need to apply for SNAP is your name, your address, and a signature. And then we have to accept that as a SNAP application, and that's a federal rule.
Thank you.
And if I, yeah, you have a question, but I want to follow up a little bit more on the SNAP applications. The last comment that you made about all you need is your name and a signature and address, does that then qualify you, or does that entitle you to a phone call from Deb Etheridge?
Chair, this is Deb Etheridge. What that does is it essentially saves your application date. So we would have to call you and follow up and ask additional information, but it secures the date of application.
Okay. And just to follow up to that, for both the Medicaid redeterminations, which you've started, and the SNAP applications, I guess what is the error rate and how much does the error rate, not getting complete information, wrong information, et cetera, contribute to the backlog?
Chair, this is Deb Etheridge. We, prior to, it's always more complicated, in order for us to process cases and sort of stop the backlog from growing, the division, with support from the commissioner's office, extended certification periods for an additional 6 months. When we go back and review those cases for quality review, all of those are considered in error because we didn't have a current application. And so the division anticipates having a high error rate until 2025. But when we are able to look at those individuals that we processed, we have a significantly lower error rate at about 5.6%. And so we will have a high error rate, and I can speak to the reasons behind that. And again, it's about extending certification without an application. And so we have typically at the division had a low error rate.
Good. And just to comment, I tried to fill out the form, and it looked like that was going to be a significant improvement as to error rate. I didn't have the paperwork, and I had trouble finding my password and all that, but it looked like it was going to be a step in the right direction. Good. Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, different topic. Thanks for the update on the Fresh Start. And I think there's actually a lot of opportunity for your department to support better health outcomes and addressing chronic diseases, including in the area of the built environment, so it's just safe for people to get out and move around. And what I wanted to ask about is how much has your department thought about or engaged with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, so as they engage in long-term planning like state transportation improvement program, implementation of safe routes to schools where there's both state and local involvement. How can you empower that department to understand how just being able to safely walk can positively impact issues like chronic health diseases? It's important to note, I think, a lot of our local governments have plans. MATSU, I know, recently adopted a non-motorized plan. Anchorage adopted a new downtown plan. It's actually state roads, in many cases, that are the barriers to implementation of those plans. State roads are barriers to kids walking to school, people walking to the office, walking to the store. So just your reflection on how you can help DOT make better decisions, I would appreciate that.
For the record, Heidi Hedberg, through the chair, Representative Fields, the Division of Public Health, the Section of Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion, does have a working relationship with the Department of Transportation and does provide feedback.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative McCormick.
Thank you. Through the chair, for the record, I just want to say I'm from Bethel, and it's very hot in here.
So I'm struggling a little bit. So nonetheless, I want to thank you, your department, for answering all the calls that we had throughout the interim regarding SNAP. That's top of mind for a lot of my constituents. Both figuratively and literally, you answered the call when we made those calls. And I think for the most part, we got a lot of those cases taken care of. So really just want to thank you for that. The question I did have, and I want to reiterate, I said it in the last committee, I'm not putting you on the spot, just the broken record on its second turn, I guess. So I've heard from both constituents and nonprofits who I would like to note employ a large number of individuals in rural Alaska. I've heard from them about a major concern that the state is not paying grantees in a timely manner. And so I was hoping if maybe you could speak to any grants that you have in place, and if there's anything that can be done maybe to ensure that these grants are being paid in a timely manner.
For the record, Heidi Hedberg, through the chair, Representative McCormick. So before the Department of Health, when we were the Department of Health and Social Services, the Department of Health and Social Services did have a cyber attack that did significantly impact all of our IT systems, in addition to our grant management system called GEMS. And so we acknowledge that there was a delay, and that was a couple of years ago. Fast forward, there was a department reorganization. We have the Department of Health. I did pull our data, and I have our data on the average processing days for physical payments for each division. From Division of Behavioral Health, it's 1.74 days. The longest is the Division of Seniors and Disability Services, and it's 2.89 days.
Thank you. That's all I have.
During the budget discussions last year, subject that got a lot of scrutiny was a program that you're starting to identify, I think this was pregnant women that had syphilis. And there was quite a bit of money devoted to that. And do you have some results from that program?
For the record, Heidi Hedberg, to the chair, yes, I can give some general updates. And if you have further questions, I will call up our director for public health. So last year, we did the legislature appropriated funding for congenital syphilis and tuberculosis. All of that funding went out to communities. The focus has been first communication and education on awareness of syphilis, and then testing for syphilis. And the funding that is out there with our grantees, we have seen an increase in identification of syphilis, and they have been immediately treated.
And it was to be expected. Working as designed, I guess, is the bottom line.
To the chair, yes, it is working as designed.
Okay, good. Thank you. Representative Fields.
Thank you, through the chair. As the commissioner knows, I'm very interested in restoring some of the funding for the infant learning program that has fallen as a result of inflation over the last few years. So I don't expect you to have the answer offhand, but I'd like to get an understanding of what funding increment would be necessary simply to provide those services to individuals who are screened and as eligible. In last year's budget cycle, I recall we were screening some people in and treating the most acute cases, but not treating all of them. And I would like to understand what level of funding is necessary to, I think, catch up with inflation and treat those kids who need those services. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? There was there's a couple of pages after it said questions. Do we need to cover the last 15 and 16 of the presentation?
For the record, Heidi Hedberg, they were just slides. We were not sure the committee and what direction the conversation was going to go, so we just wanted to be prepared.
Okay. We've got 7 minutes.
To the chair, we'd like to announce, we'd like to provide one other update to the committee for the record. This is Emily Ricci, Deputy Commissioner with the department. And we are pleased to announce that we are going live with a postpartum extension February 1st of this year. We had indicated that we would work to implement go live faster than July 1st if we were able to. And our teams worked very hard, and that will go live in approximately a week. So I wanted to share that news with the committee.
Good. Thank you. Anything else from the committee? Anything else that we've forgotten that you would like to talk about?
We're good. Thank you, sir.
You're good. Okay. Well, very good. It's good to see. It looks like both the Division of Family Services and the Department of Health are definitely headed in the right direction. I would expect there will be some follow-up as we go through the budget process and et cetera. But, yeah, encouraging. And that happened. Why was that again that that happened? Because?
We leaned into it.
Yes. All right. Very good. Okay. So if there's no other business, or there is no other business, and that concludes this presentation. And I think at that point, any other closing comments from the committee? Good. Our next meeting will be on Tuesday, January 30th, where we'll hear the Governor's House Bill 275, Sexual Assault Examination Kits and Tracking, and House Bill 264, Child Trafficking Screening, sponsored by Representative Vance. And with that, thank you for attending, and we are adjourned at 3:54.